Right. I'm back. I'm back again. After another long break. It's episode 43 of the sporadic, inconsistent Mason's Man Cave. Macy's Man Cave. It's 4:51 a.m., believe it or not, on Saturday. What is it? 27th of April, 2024. And I'm back again after another 3 or 4 week hiatus. My plan for 2024 to do a podcast every week has, I think you can sense if you're listening to this, gone by the wayside a little bit. Haven't been putting it off. It's just been one of those years. It's been one of those years so far. The twins have consistently been ill. Gemma is ill right now with a hacking cough. Everyone's got hacking coughs apart from me. The twins' hacking cough just hasn't gone away. They've been talking about a 100-day cough. This is probably a 200-day cough. And we've tried everything. They've been to the doctors 2 or 3 times. I've spent an absolute fortune. I mentioned it on the last episode on Calpol. What's the other shares I should have bought? Puritan. Those are the other shares I should have bought. Pharmaceutical shares I should have bought, because I've been spending a small fortune on Puritan. And they've just got this real rasping, chesty cough that will not go away, that they double up on. The only way they can stop the cough is to have a drink. So we've recently, I've got a friend at work who's had, unfortunately, whose daughter's quite ill, or has been quite ill, and had lots of specialists, very chesty issues. And so there's this bubble pep thing we're doing at the moment where they're blowing bubbles through empty milk bottles. It's too difficult to even explain on a podcast, on the medium of pod. But you blow for 10 cycles and then you cough, and then it's supposed to bring up all the gunky junk that sits on your chest that they haven't been able to get rid of. What a lovely way to start my podcast, talking about illness. But we are now into nearly the fifth month of the year. And what have we learnt so far this year? Well, if you're living in the UK, you will know that the UK has just gone to fucking shit. The weather's shit. The weather is so bad. I keep getting, you know, when you have your Facebook and little memories pop up, I keep getting memories of years gone by, like that glorious spring of 2020, when we were all basking in sunshine from mid-March to the end, you know, mid-March, end of March, and we was having like 70 degree heat from March time. Yeah, none of that. I don't think there's a single day so far. It's absolutely pissing down. If there's some background noise, that's probably the rain on said man cave. So the rain's been terrible. The weather, just overall has been terrible. Really, really bad. Not a single day, I don't think. I mean, yesterday the sun was out, but it was still freezing. And then you're thinking, oh, it's the weekend and I've got West Ham today. Go and watch West Ham and get me shorts on and, you know, bask in the sunshine. No, check the weather. Rain all day. So it's going to be wet and miserable. That's going to be the weather. The football's probably going to be miserable and wet because West Ham have capitulated. Is that the word? Capitulated. They have been knocked out of Europe. So that was the third year. If you're not into your footy, or if you're American, soccer, So West Ham have been knocked out of Europe. They've been getting smashed by every team that they play. They've been playing absolutely terrible. The only game this year worth talking about is the game against Bayer Leverkusen at home 2 weeks ago on a Thursday night, where we needed to win 2-0. Needed to win 3-0, basically, or on penalties, because we was 2-0 down from the first leg, and we scored in the 13th minute. Michael Antonio, Mickey, to go 1-0 up, and probably played the best football we've played for a good year in that home leg. But apart from that, it's been absolute dross. West Ham fans all over X and Twitter, whatever you want to call it, have just been saying it's time for the manager, David Moyes, to go, which I think is probably true. I was one of his supporters, but the football this year has been awful to watch. And I think people are hanging back on renewing their season tickets. Season ticket holders like me are holding back. The two reasons why you hold back on your season ticket: A, you don't want to pay in advance of the deadline, because why would you? You just want to keep the interest for yourself. And B, we want to know what the strategy is. But unfortunately, West Ham, there normally is. The strategy is there is no strategy, which is quite depressing, because it happens every year. We think that they want to. So our manager Moyes is out of contract. And you get all these pundits on the radio and the TV. Oh, West Ham fans, you know, Moyes, you know, he's done a remarkable job. Absolutely remarkable job for West Ham. You know, fans, West Ham fans should be much more appreciative of what he's done for them. And they should be careful what they wish for. And I think that's quite offensive, really. There was a radio show not so long ago where it was like, oh, West Ham fans are so ungrateful to Moyes. You know, they should be careful what they wish for. And then they started talking about all the teams, the other teams in the league, and whether Moyes would go and manage them. And it was like, no, the fans wouldn't put up with him there. Nah, the owners wouldn't have him there. No. So on the one hand, we're supposed to put up with it because he's a nice bloke, because he's Scottish and he's a nice bloke. And yes, he did come in and steadied the ship. And yes, he did win us our first piece of silverware for over 40 years. Yes, he did those things. But at the same time, the football has been dross. I mean, I am, what am I now, 54? I'm too old. So it's 19, so I've been going since I was 17, 18, 77, 87, 88, and 88, 89, I suppose, was the main, when I really started going. I think my first game, I was in 84, 85, it was a home game. I was staying at my nan's. It was against, my very first game to watch West Ham was against Man United. And I went with a friend that I'd made that lived near my grandma on Keppel Road in East Ham. And we walked up the bar. I was 14. And walked up the Keppel Road. I walked up the Barking Road, paid on the door to get into the South Bank. I had to queue for ages to get into the South Bank. And was hooked from that point on. But anyway, and it was Man United, as I recall. As I said, big game. You wouldn't even, you know, you could just turn up, rock up at a stadium against a team like Man United in the 80s and just queue to get in. Pay on the gate or jump over the turnstile and pay on the gate. Very rarely was there all-ticket matches. The only first kind of like all-ticket matches I remember would be like the semi-final, the Rumbelows Cup against Birmingham. That was one I remember. You know, it was those old ticket games were just those games where you had to, you know, they were expecting a lot of trouble because Birmingham, we'd had some issues with Birmingham. So yeah, you could just rock up at a stadium. Imagine that now, just rocking up at a stadium, But then, yeah, I had a season ticket soon after, and I have had a season ticket every season since then. And there's been West Ham fans. If you're a West Ham fan listening to this, you'll know. It's been 40 odd years of ups and downs, of highs and lows, of managerial incompetence, of ownership incompetence. You know, only at West Ham could, you know, we have gone through things like the bond scheme where, you know, we thought we would try and recreate what Arsenal did to raise fundings, to redevelop Upton Park, and we just handled it terribly. I remember the bond scheme. I went to a presentation by Trevor Brooking where they're explaining what the bond scheme, what you'd get for your money. Basically, you'd just get the right to have your seat. And so there's the bond scheme. And years later, then we had the Macari affair where we had a manager, Lou Macari, for 28 days or whatever it was. No, it was longer than that, obviously. Who actually tried to make the players train. And then we had, the next big thing, I suppose, was we got taken over by billionaires who went bust. I mean, it's just like this West Ham. It's just West Ham all over. We finally get taken over by what appears to be billionaire biscuit. Was it biscuit manufacturers? Olog? Oh, I can't remember the names now. But they were Finnish. I want to say Finnish. Finnish? Swedish? Finnish. And they had connections to airlines and XL Airways, I think it was, low-cost airlines. We went like, and then, you know, then there was, so it was 2008, there was a financial crash. They overspent. We were spending millions on players. Lucas Neal, remember him? I mean, it was interesting. I think we spent a year, at least a whole season, when our sponsors went, our sponsors went bust, XL Airlines went bust. We had a year where our shirts were covered with a patch. A fucking patch. It wasn't even, they didn't even print shirts without the sponsor. They just put a patch over our sponsor's logo for a year. So that was fun. And of course we've moved stadiums, and then we had our horrendous season. And there's all the hoo-ha about, you know, we had a fantastic last season. That was probably the last great season. If you exclude last year, where we weren't very good in the league, but we actually finally won a trophy, and a European one at that. But yes, I think the end is nigh. David Moyes is out of contract. I really, really can't see anything other than a crushing, humiliating defeat today against Liverpool. So we're going to get absolutely soaked. We're going to watch a game where West Ham are probably going to just get smashed out of sight. I wouldn't be surprised if it was 2-0 or 3-0 down by half time. The fans are going to be on the back. All Liverpool need to do to win the game today, if I was Jürgen Klopp, all I'd be saying to Liverpool is let's start quick. They always start slow, West Ham, which is true, we do. Get one goal, the crowd will get on their back, then they'll start to panic, and we'll just rip them to fucking shreds. That would be my Mystic Mace prediction for today. But enough about football. I don't know you don't tune into this podcast to listen to me talk almost rational sense about football, soccer, to actually talk about something of meaning. You listen to this for the random nonsense and the rants and the shit. So I am going to start off with a fucking rant. I am. Because so this week, what's happened this week? So over the past week, things that have wound me up, all right? Well, firstly, this didn't wind me up, but I was at a meeting the other day, and in central London, and it was due to start at 11, and it got delayed because someone didn't turn up on time. I'll share. So I was up for election as the vice president of the trade association that governs debt recovery in the United Kingdom, or England and Wales. I put myself forward, and I was actually up against an ex-colleague, and so we were both vying for votes. And so people had voted, and we were waiting on the results, and she fucking didn't turn up on time. She was late to hear the announcement, and I lost anyway. So I wasn't voted in as vice president of our association. I don't think I garnered enough votes. I didn't do enough schmoozing. I didn't lobby enough. I didn't engage with the voting electorate enough. I kind of sent email. I had a few conversations and I sent some emails out and said, look, because everyone's asked me in the past when I've been members of these associations, hi, John, I'm going for vice president. I'm going for president. Would you vote for me? And you go, yeah. And do you vote for him? Do you fuck? No. So I just don't like that kind of two-facedness. I didn't want people saying to me, to my face, yeah, of course, John, I'll get your vote, and then get my hopes up, and then, or have some, go into the meeting with some level of confidence. I kind of went into the meeting thinking 50-50, we're a male-dominated, white, 50 to 60-year-old organisation. Our current president, our new president, is a female. It'd be good optics if the vice president was a female, and then, you know, we would have two successive female presidents of an association that is historically associated with white bald fugs, which is true. Although, you know, that's part of the association. That's part of why was my manifesto was, we need to change that image. So I suppose trying to change that image whilst looking like a big, bully, white, bald, 50-year-old, probably. I guess that is exactly why I didn't get voted. Anyway, I digress. So she was late. And do you know what her excuse was for being late? Do you not? Could you guess? Could you get this one down in your bingo card? Escaped horses running amok through London. I mean, who had that on their 2024 Armageddon bingo card? You know, apocalypse card. You know, all the incidents that are going on in the world. Who had runaway horses causing chaos and mayhem, smashing into taxis and buses and running and injuring over, was it four or five people got injured? And, you know, some of the images were quite shocking. These two horses just, well, I think it was more, but one of them covered in blood, running through the centre of London. So, she got delayed. And then just all this week, the news and X has just been dominated by this ongoing protest about Palestine and Hamas and support for Hamas, right? A terrorist organization. We yet again, every week, we are having to spend millions, let's get this into perspective, of pounds of taxpayer money to allow people on our streets in central London to support essentially a terrorist organisation. Now, I am sorry if that upsets some people, me saying that, but it's true. I've said it before, I'm going to say it again. I think protesting is just fucking pointless. But you have a right to protest, fine. Do you have a right on the streets of England, on the streets of London, to make it an intimidating place for people to go, to shout and harass and abuse people? that might hold a different view to yourself? No, I don't think you do. And the most annoying thing about the protests is what is quite clearly double standards by the Met Police. Double standards that they stand by. They, like, 2 weeks ago, I think it was, there was a protest, and a Jewish guy was told he would get arrested if he didn't move away because he looked too Jewish. I mean, just the most fucking shocking exchange I've seen between a police officer and a member of public wanting to go about their peaceful business, but is being told that they'll get arrested because the police officer is worried that he would get attacked by hostile pro-Palestinian protesters. And so that all kicked off. And then the Met Police they couldn't have handled it any worse than they did. They did a press release where they said they basically put the blame on him for being there. And then the next day, they did another apology. They apologised for their apology, saying, "We apologise for the apology that we issued. That's not the way we should apologise, for which we are truly sorry for." It was just fucking the most ridiculous. I don't tweet much, and I don't X much on Twitter or whatever you want to call it. It's just, should we just call it Twitter? Let's forget it. It's called X. Thanks, Elon. But I was, some of my tweets, my most popular tweets this year have been my ones taking the piss out of the Met Police. I'd love them to knock on my door. Anyway, just saying, tomorrow we will be issuing an apology for not apologising for something we should have apologised. It was just one of those kind of silly, childish things. So they couldn't have handled it any worse. And then, I don't know, Hamas, this Hamas organisation, right? I'm not being funny, for all the bombing and, you know, maiming that the Israelis have done, their fucking PR department is fucking good. I mean, they have sold their cause, haven't they? You know, they have sold their cause. It's not like, you know, it's not like the glory days of terrorism. You know, with your ISIS and your Al-Qaeda's, you know, they would commit an atrocity, and pretty much everyone to a man would condemn them. Yeah, we got to go after these fuckers. Let's go after these fuckers. Let's fucking destroy them. Let's eradicate them. You know, it's a terrorist act. It's outrageous. We support our government going after them. Let's fucking fuck them up. Do you know what I mean? When 9/11 happened, 9/11, what was it? September 11th, 2001. When that happened, yeah, okay, maybe they went a little bit over the top with the whole invasion of Iraq, you know, sexed up dossiers and, you know, lying to go to war. Maybe they kind of went a little bit too far, but at the time, overall, I would have said the American public and the UK, you know, the allies, let's fucking go after Bin Laden. Let's fucking nail him. And is it social media? I don't know. But Hamas seems, they've nailed it. I mean, John Lewis's are in trouble at the moment, aren't they? John Lewis, you know, their PR and Bud Light and all these various organisations that seem to be having, you know, problems with their PR and their and the way that they're perceived by that's Esso, BP, you know, they are getting attacked daily, weekly by Just Stop Oil and all those fucking grifters from Somerset and Dorset and you know, the Cotswolds. And all, you know, and you know, they're getting attacked by those people saying that, you know, we should stop producing fossil fuels and all that kind of stuff. If I was their CEO, I would try and find out who's in charge of Hamas's PR. Because I'd go out and try and recruit them. Because they have sold their fucking cause to what I can own, I am going to be honest and open. If you listen to, and if my kids are listening to this in years gone by, in years time, hopefully you'll understand. But yeah, they've just brainwashed people, I think. And now you've got campuses in America and London, apparently, now. I saw this morning on the news, and France, where they've stopped learning stuff, going to university to learn stuff, and they're just kind of setting up camp on the grounds of the university to protest against. I mean, what university? I know universities do get involved in things like, you know, research that could, I suppose, lead to the development of weapons, but I don't think they're actually. I don't think, you know, they've got, like, professors and, you know, people actually out there serving in, you know, the Israeli Defense Force attacking Hamas. But, you know, you've got all these, they're kind of like, I just don't get it. They're protesting at their university, which they're spending, well, in America in particular, you know, they're spending £80,000 a year or whatever it is to go to university to learn to be, you know, to get the qualifications to get themselves a good job or to become a politician or whatever. But they're like, at the moment, they're like, ah, fuck it. Let's just set up camp, not go to lessons and studies, and let's just protest against our university for not doing something in relation to the conflict. I mean, what the fuck is that all about? I mean, just, and I've seen all these, again, seen all these interviews on Twitter and stuff like that, where people are getting interviewed and they're like, what was it you're saying? You know, what is it that you think your university should do? You know, what you know, I know, why are you here? There was the one, it was why are you here? And she went, oh, I'm from so-and-so and I've come down to this university in Los Angeles or California. And she went, why? And she went, because I heard they were protesting. And the interviewer goes, well, what about? And she went, I don't know. It's like, what the fuck? And just the world just has gone mad. Gemma said it to me the other day. People are getting stabbed. Our streets just don't feel safe anymore. Do not feel safe. You know, my kids, my twins, the walk to our school, their school is what, 3 minutes away? And like I've mentioned it before, I used to walk. Might have been last pod, you know, it was like a half an hour walk. Their age, I was walking to school, younger than their age, on my own or with my mates. No parental oversight whatsoever. I'm still worried about my 30-year-old son getting into trouble. I suppose you always worry when you're a parent. But it just feels like we're in that, I hope I'm wrong. I hope I am wrong. But if we survive, if we don't enter into some major fucking global conflict or worse, then there's going to be some riots this year, definitely. I've definitely got riots on my bingo card. There'll be some riots. I don't know. I'm not quite sure. Oh, before we move on to the riots, let me just finish on the police thing. Let me take it. Oh, I feel like I'm ranting today. I'm sorry. It's not an amusing one, is it? Mm. But yeah, so, and of course, what's happened every weekend so far, every single weekend so far, we've had these pro-Palestinian, anti-Israeli, openly anti-Jewish protests on our street, where Jewish people, and I know there are some Jewish people that have kind of joined with some of these rallies, but the general vibe and the general view out there is that Jewish people do not feel safe on our streets. As a non-Jewish person, I would not particularly feel safe on our streets. We're taking the girls, the twins, to London next Sunday. So normally they do this on a Saturday, because they got to go to, most of the protesters have got to go to sit, go for Sunday dinner. Down, you know, Tarquin and Elsbeth have got to go to Sunday dinner at Daddy's because daddy's like some retired fucking CEO living out in the fucking Cotswold or, you know, Surrey, near fucking where George Harrison used to have a cottage or something. It'll be something like that. And they've got to go to Sunday dinner. So it's normally Saturday. So Sunday we should be okay. But I even myself, like, walking through the streets of London, wouldn't feel particularly safe. But anyway, so of course then we had what is the left's most despised, hated, mocked, the left in England's most despised, hated and mocked day of the year. And that is St. George's Day. So we had that in the week. And the left just fucking hates it and just likes being provocative. Because, of course, if you live in England, you know that you're not allowed. I say not allowed. And even that, even me just saying that, someone on the left, on the hard left, would go, no one says you're not allowed. Just, I want to call you a fucking racist cunt for thinking it. You're not, you know, you can say what you want. Okay, so it's not that you're not allowed. You get mocked. Let's say that. You get mocked for having any kind of affinity for your national flag, for the St. George's Cross. You get mocked for celebrating St. George's Day, where we celebrate the patron, is it the patron saint of England, St. George, who was Turkish, apparently. They bring that out every year. Who gives a fuck? It's just a day. It's just a day where I couldn't care if it wasn't even a saint. Can we just have a day? Forget about St. George. Let's just have a day. There's a day for everything. There's fucking LGBT, there's Pride Month, there's da-da-da. Can we not just have one day, just one day, where we celebrate being English, where we can celebrate being born in England, where we're not mocked for flying the St. George's Cross, where we're not mocked for talking about our traditions that you know, or perhaps times gone by, have memories and recollections of great events that we've been involved in. Can we not just do that? Can we not just have, can you not just give us one day where you just turn off Twitter, go and shut the fuck up, go in a corner, go on a protest, go and stand outside some oil refinery or something, or go to a university in America and go and join them people and just let us celebrate being English. You know, we can celebrate Eid. I'm fine with it. We can celebrate Jewish holidays and we can celebrate Muslim holidays and we can celebrate Sikh holidays and whatever you want to do. You know, I'm even happy for you to teach my kids it at school. We can do all of that stuff. We can do all of it. But just give me one day. I was born in England. I'm English. Yes, I'm afraid I'm white. I'm probably seen as very privileged. And yes, I do hark on to being able to walk down the street feeling safe. God, Jesus. God, imagine. God, how out of touch I must be to want a kind of society like that. Imagine how outrageous it is that I should want to be able to feel that my kids could walk to school safely, to feel that I can proudly fly a St. George's flag outside my house on one day a year, you know, without people driving by going, fucking racist. Look at that cunt. Yeah, imagine that. Imagine. Now, like, can we do that? Could you maybe just give us that, whoever's in charge? Could you not just give us that one day, please? And we can talk about things like Terry and June, and we can talk about Only Fools and Horses and winning the World Cup in 1966. And we might even be able to talk about contribution we've made to war and ending slavery and all the good things that we've done, that our country has done, rather than just go, oh, St. George was, you do know St. George was Turkish, don't you? Anyone who flies the St. George's flag is racist. They really are racist, you know. And to serve the point, of course, there was a tiny, tiddly little St. George's Day march. Was it in the week? And having seen our police allow thousands upon thousands of quite, you know, terrorists supporting people who go on those marches have attacked people who are denouncing terrorism, and the police have stood by, these are facts, and watched it happen and allowed it to happen and threatened to arrest the people denouncing terrorism and have arrested people denouncing Hamas. Yet the people that are supporting, you know, Hamas, you know, and being anti-Jewish, anti-Semitic, are being allowed to do that. And then we have what I thought was, the video seemed to say, 100, 200 English supporting St. George flag flying white, yes, few other colours. BAME people were present at that. I've seen the videos. You can see people from different ethnicities with St. George's flags. Sikhs, Muslims, black people. And what happens? Something's, a little incident's gone on, and within seconds, the riot police turn up, and the Met Police are tweeting with glee about what they're calling, you know, right-wing groups and disruption and arrests. And it's just like, yeah, that's the script. That was, you could have, if the bookmakers were given odds, you could have won some money on that, because it was, and then, you know, it's just what appears to be double standards. I mean, it is double standards. There are marches today, and you won't see the riot police, you won't see anything, and they're not peaceful. You've got videos up there, and you can see the abuse, you can see the harm, and it is making people scared, mainly Jewish people, scared of going on the streets of London. So it's inconsistency. So anyway, you can't give us our day, fair enough, fuck yeah. The final thing I'd say on the whole flag thing is it's just, where did we go wrong? Why is it that, I mean, I know there's been some issues recently with some of these, you know, college students burning the American flag, but generally you can go to the USA and, you know, on the whole, most states I've been to, New Jersey, you know, even California, Vegas, Florida, you know, that, you know, Louisiana, they fly the flag. Sorry, they fly the flag, and they're proud Americans. You know, why are we not allowed to be proud English people? Is that not? Do we not offer the similar or same levels of opportunity? Everyone seems quite keen to come here. You know, from safer countries, you know. So if you're, say, you know, from safer countries, we've got, you know, people getting arrested and committed for murder, like this week, that arrived here as asylum seekers, having been successfully accepted as asylum seekers in three or four other countries before they got here, right? So I get the arguments that you get on the left about offering a safe route for migrants, you know, that are fleeing war, war-torn countries, or persecution in their other countries, right? France is not a war-torn country. That's the issue that we have. That's the issue that I have, that people like me have. I am not unsympathetic to the to the cause. I am not a heartless fucking bastard that doesn't care about the suffering of women and children. Yeah? And this is where that message gets missed. This is where that message, because you get, when you start talking about these things, you get shouted down. You get talked about. You get accused of being racist or heartless. That the left, it's only the left that are allowed to be caring and compassionate. Right? But if you're fleeing from France, you are not fleeing from a war-torn country. You are not seeking safe haven from persecution. EU, if you're fleeing from, if you're fleeing from EU country, now this is the union that the left was so keen on us staying in. Right? This is what gets me. This was the, the Brexit, whole Brexit thing. We want to be part of a union where everybody has the right to be safe and, it's so inclusive and we've got rights, everybody, where you've got workers' rights and mice rights and cat rights and everybody's got fucking rights and there's 1,000 pages of rules about how you need to grow a fucking banana and all those other jingoistic analogies. But anyway. So if you're fleeing from France, I'm sorry, that's not, stop the boats. I don't know why, we've got this whole Rwanda thing where the government seems to think that we're going to prevent people coming to the UK by announcing that if you come to the UK, we're going to send you to Rwanda. It's not going to work. It's going to be too expensive. It's an absolute fucking farce. There should be a policy where we turn. France are allowing it to happen. If someone's on a boat and they're fleeing from, or if they've arrived at our country by plane and they claim asylum, then yes, let's process them. Let's give them shelter. Let's give them housing. Let's give them whatever we can. Yeah? If they have come from a country that is war-torn, that if they stay in that country, they are potentially going to die or their children are going to die. That is not going to happen in France. It's not. They choose to leave a safe country. They choose to make that dangerous dirt journey. Why is that? And when they get here, why is that? Why is that? Why do they do that? Someone explain it to me. I've lost whatever listeners I had, haven't I? I wanted to get it off my chest. It's been on my mind. I don't know why. I just feel. So I'm sorry, it's not a very uplifting podcast on my return, but I just feels. Just feels. Gemma said, "What world are we bringing our kids into? What world? I don't know what world we are bringing our kids into. It's fucking scary. I have sleepless nights about the bigger things. The big things. The big disasters and wars. That scares the fuck out of me." And always has since I watched War Games. Shall we play a game? Do you remember that? Shall we play a game? Matthew Broderick nearly sent us all to hell. War Games. Cool. And then there was that other thing. What was the other one? Threads. God, this is fucking depressing. So in England we had Threads. That was all about. That was Rhys Dinsdale, I think I remember. And that was all about nuclear Armageddon in Sheffield. Yeah, a nuclear bomb went off in Sheffield, caused £2 billion worth of improvements. Ta-da! Boom! I'm here all week. Threads, what was it, the day after? I think that was an American one. Yeah, that's scary as fuck. Because that could just happen. I've talked about nuclear Armageddon before, haven't I? I'm just getting repeat myself. That's when I told you that Boy George, that's why we need Boy George back telling us war is stupid. Or Frankie Goes to Hollywood. They reformed apparently recently. Frankie Goes to Hollywood and was shite. They played a gig in Liverpool and kind of like did like two records, I think. Well, I suppose there was only two hits really, wasn't there? Well, was it two, three? So it was Relax. Two Tribes. Welcome to the Pleasure Dome. What else was there? Know Your Frankie History. Power of Love, a Christmas record, wasn't there? I remember the double album. Welcome to the Pleasure Dome, the album. And it was just all cartoon knobs and fannies. And I was 14 or 15. I don't think my mum realised. I was terrible, really. My mum used to have prayer meetings. Have I told you this before? Apologies if I have. My mum used to have prayer meetings as a committed Christian around the house. And I'd be in the lounge playing Depeche Mode, Blasphemous Rumours. I don't want to spark any blasphemous rumours, but I think that God's got a sick sense of humour, and when I die, I expect to find him laughing. I think he's the line. And it's very morbid. It's from Depeche Mode's Black Celebration era, when I started to really get into them, 86. When I started to get into Depeche Mode, my mum and dad got into Jesus. Imagine the juxtaposition of that. I got invited to my mum and dad's baptism, where they were going to get baptised in a swimming pool, I think it was, naked. Just didn't, at the age of 16, didn't really appeal to me. I don't know if my listeners can, if you, my listener, can relate to that. I think that's why I reminisce so much about the olden days. That's why I reminisce so much, because it felt safer. And is that down to the internet, maybe, and social media? Because people got stabbed in the 80s, right? People got murdered in the 80s. There was protests in the 80s. You know, we had the miners' strike, and we had, you know, anti-war. We had Greenpeace activists, you know. We had, you know, there was a lot of, you know, upheaval in the 70s and the 60s. But is it just because it's just so in your face now? Is it more hostile? I mean, you've got the left and the right. You know, the far right and the far left, they need to go on a holiday camp somewhere, don't they? Or we just need to send them somewhere, Australia. just let the people down the middle, you know. Just let us kind of like live our lives, I suppose. But yeah, that's why I think I reminisce a lot. Although, unfortunately, today I've reminisced about Armageddon and war games and documentaries about nuclear Armageddon. But that's scary as fuck though, right? That scares me. Sometimes I can't go to sleep. I genuinely cannot go to sleep about it. I just need to be, I've said it before, I want to be at ground zero. I'm sorry, kids, if you're listening to this and you made it through the times we're living in, you know, I wanted us to be underneath. I want to be at ground zero, and I just want to be vaporized in an instant with my family. Just enough time to hold on to each other and say goodbye. How fucking morbid is this today? Fuck me. Right, let's finish by liven it up. I didn't get around to talk to any. I didn't expect to rant that much. I am sorry. That's 50 minutes of me losing listeners, isn't it? What few listeners I had on Mace's Man Cave are going to be like, fucking hell. Tuned into that mug. Jesus. But as I said, Just feels a bit weird. Just weird at the moment. But anyway, so should we leave on a lightened mood? So on a lighter mood. So one of the things that I was thinking about recently, oh, actually, it was prompted by this tweet, right? So this bloke called Josh Pugh, so I'm giving him credit, so don't at me. So I saw on Twitter, and he posted this. He said, Bryan Adams, do you know, remember Bryan Adams, the Canadian rocker? Bryan Adams, probably do, turned 65 this year. 2024 is 65. Which means that in the summer of 1969, you remember that song you sang? The summer is 69, he would have been 10. What kind of parents allow a 10-year-old to spend his evenings down at the drive-in? I can completely understand why Jimmy wanted no part of it. And it just made me laugh. Because actually, I remember that song coming out in the summer of 69. I didn't really think of the fact that he was at 10. He would have been the age of 10. But we can all write about things. You know, these musicians can write about things that don't make much sense. But I was thinking about Bryan Adams writing about that. And then I was listening to someone's done a cover version of Fast Car, the Tracy Chapman record, but it's a country and western singer singing it. And of course the lyrics to Fast Car about working as a checkout girl. So it's kind of like, yeah, okay, you know, you can sing it and it sounds good. You know, you've done a good job there. But the lyrics about, you know, I've been working as a checkout girl, when you've got this really country accent. And I was thinking about collaborations, and I was looking at famous music collaborations, and there was a couple that came to mind. So there was Aerosmith and Run DMC. Remember that? It's kind of like an unlikely pairing, wouldn't you say? Aerosmith, at the time it certainly was. The other one that really sticks in my mind was Bowie and Bing Crosby. I mean, that was, again, at the time, I think quite an unusual collaboration. Apparently, I've never listened to it. Ozzy Osbourne and Miss Piggy made a record together. I must hunt that one out. But as I'm doing it, I came across a Kate Bush song, right? And it's not the one. It's not the famous one. So Kate Bush did this famous collaboration. I think I've even played it as my last song with Peter Gabriel called "Don't Give Up." But she did another collaboration, and I'm ashamed as a Kate Bush kind of fan. So I read something yesterday. Kate Bush, she's got a song called Army Dreamers, which has been out years and years and years, and for some reason it's gone from 80,000 listens on Spotify to 1 million a week or something, really, and like it hasn't been on any TV shows or anything. But anyway, I digress. Right, so Kate Bush, I'm going to leave you on this song by Kate Bush, right? And it's called Why Should I Love You, right? And it's quite good. But there are two, it's a collaboration with two people, two famous black people, right? So I'm going to do something strange, right? I'm going to play it, I'm going to hold it out, because you will not believe, you're not allowed to look on Google, but you got to listen to the song, right? And you got to tell me. Please play along, because it's worth the wait. You've got to tell me who Kate Bush is collaborating with to make this song, right? So, are you ready?
This chapter says, put it out of your mind. Give it time. Purple, the purest gold, the red of the sacred heart, the gray of the ghost, the L of the lips are open to the O of the host, the V of the velvet. Have you ever seen a picture of Jesus laughing? Do you think he had a beautiful smile? A smile that healed.
That was pretty good, right? So that was Kate Bush, right? So when people have man caves, they have random things in their man caves. And that was random. Did you get it? Okay, so Kate Bush. Why I never knew this song, I have no idea. I just came across it. Unmistakably with a Prince influence. Can you get the Prince guitars and the rhythm? There was definitely Prince. So Prince collaborated on this song with Kate Bush over many years, apparently. They met and he was a big fan of Kate Bush. Apparently he sent her some recordings of the music she sent him something and then he kind of like basically changed it completely, and then she dithered for years and years and years because she didn't want to upset him by changing it again, but because he'd like completely rewritten it entirely. So that was Prince. But on backing vocals to that song is the great Lenny Henry. So the male backing vocals on that record you just listened to was Lenny Henry, who will mean nothing probably to any of my American listeners, but certainly will to my British listeners. Is a black comedian who starred on a talent show called New Faces. and became a national institution with his impressions. And he was on a Saturday morning kids show called Tiz Was, and he was one of the founding members of Comic Relief in the UK. And yeah, he sang backing vocals on a record by Kate Bush with the late great Prince. Now, if that's not random, if that's not man cave material, we've gone from talking about the weather, terrorism, protesters, Armageddon, and finishing off with Lenny Henry singing backing vocals to a Prince and Kate Bush song. You cannot get more random. I mean, that's why you tune in, right? That is why you tune in to Macy's Man Cave, for the randomness. And I thank you for listening. If you stuck with me, if you're, if you was offended by anything I said today, then I'm sorry. Go fuck yourself. But no, seriously, have a good week. Have a good weeks until I do my next one. Thanks for listening. Take care of yourselves. Be safe out there. Don't go to central London if you're Jewish, obviously, because you won't get any protection from the police. And don't fly to the St. George's flag, because you're just a fucking racist if you do. And God bless Lenny Henry. Thanks for listening. Bye.